Welcome to the M2 Woman podcast. This episode is from our M2 Woman Journey to Excellence live forum, held on the 20th of November 2020. It's brought to you by Arashiko, Piper Heidsieck, and Polynesian Spa. Anahira, what does inclusivity look like for people like you?
Oh, that's an easy one. That'd be the places that I walk into should reflect the community that they serve. I think that's a simple thing for me. We've got the largest city in the country, and we have an opportunity to change the way that we operate in these positions of power or influence or decision making, to ensure that the boards or senior management reflect the communities that we serve. I think that's simple.
Hayley, how do we have more courageous conversations, tough conversations in the workplace to get more equity? I loved when we connected earlier in the week that you mentioned we should have conversations that make people's skin crawl.
Yeah, and the reason why I say that is I actually, for a majority of the conversations, don't think that it's actually on women or people of ethnic descent or whatever category of diversity. The conversations need to be had by people who are in the majority group and who are in leadership roles and who dominate. Those are the people who need to have the conversations. Courageous, I think courageous, to be totally frank, is a kind of an overused word. I think it's more like privilege. I don't think that you can be a little bit racist, a little bit sexist, a little bit inappropriate. Doesn't mean that you're not a good person, not clever, experienced, enjoyed the good things in life. We all do. That just means that you cannot be a little bit of those things. So have the conversation with yourself first, is my tip. Hold the mirror up to yourself. Could be looking at in the mirror.
Change starts within.
So it's a little bit of the conversations need to start with yourself. Second step is when you are around the room, sometimes you are going to need to be the lone voice in the room. And that can be tough. Part of the narrative, I think, that is lost in this diversity piece and inclusion piece is, what does it mean for me as a white male? Does this mean that my career is over? Actually, I like to think of it, you have more career options than you ever thought about, because you, as well, are not wed to the sales positions, the exec accounts, and all of the places that typically have been mailed. And those are all based on very historic gender stereotypes. So the fullness and the beauty in this D&I conversation is for everybody. But there's some uncomfortableness that you need to go through first, and that is an absolute necessary ingredient, and that's why I sort of say every now and again, it needs to make your skin crawl to get the necessary change. And typically, if your skin is not crawling, or you think, oh no, I'm fine, I'm all good, actually I can't say there's absolutely nothing wrong with me, I'm fine, there's a really big neon line in lights saying that is the first step. You need to get out of denial, and the only way you can get out of denial is to face up to it first.
Zoe, please share some anecdotes, perhaps around Zero or the ADHB, about the great work they're doing.
Sure. So Zero are another organisation who are doing some quite progressive work in this space. I know they've just launched a new parental leave campaign, which people get 26 weeks paid parental leave, full paid, and then after that they get a really staggered approach back to work. Partner leave is 6 weeks full pay, and that, I think, is what we're going to be seeing next come through the organisations. I know that organisations are getting better at providing parental leave, but the partner leave, I think, is the key that we're going to see change, and more organisations are increasing that paid level because they're acknowledging that in heterosexual two-people families, that key time when a child comes into someone's life is so important for the connection for the family, but also to make sure that everyone is well, and to make sure that then if a female is in the relationship, that they then go out on to feel supported and go back to work and are able to continue their career if they choose to do so. I know that Xero also measure both their gender data and their ethnicity data, which I think a lot of organisations can sometimes struggle with, because they think, oh, ethnicity, what does that mean? We can't block people into, you know, five different ethnic groups. There's going to be hundreds. We'll have to, you know, search through the data and try and make work of it. But actually, there are ways that you can do it that aren't so scary and huge. There are ways of measuring it, so you do get some good data, and then you're able to look at what you've got and how you and how you're using it. In terms of the ADHB, I chair the People and Culture Subcommittee there, so I've had, although it's at a governance level, I've had a real oversight of what's going on. And what we've really tried to do is acknowledge Te Ao Māori and acknowledge Mātauranga Māori, and making sure that that is in the at the centre of everything that happens within the organisation. We've also, like I said, a couple of years ago, we were really focused on recruitment and realised that it's all well and good getting women into the organisation, getting Māori, getting Pacifica, getting young people, getting people who identify as having a disability into the organisation, but it's no good doing that if then they just leave in 6 months because they don't feel like they belong. So really focusing on that retention of people and how you create a culture of belonging within an organisation is absolutely key. And I know that at the ADHB, it's still a journey, especially with a huge beast like the health board, but one that's absolutely worth taking, both because it's the right thing to do, but also there's a huge business case for it.
Great. Next question for you, Sean. Whose role is it to create inclusive workplaces?
Yeah, it's everyone's role, but if I apply that corporate context, the sponsorship's got to start at the top. So if you don't have board and executive buy-in, then you've got a real problem to actually execute and involve change. We had our board meeting two weeks ago, and I was getting quite a hurry up from our directors associated to the pace at which we are changing the gender and ethnic mix, and they're saying it's not quick enough, it's not fast enough, and we're putting our business at risk from a business success perspective. So that's good feedback, but we need to work harder and faster at it. So I think it's board, I think it's executive, but everyone has an accountability and responsibility to it, because it comes back to, you know, Mackenzie's question of me this morning: why are you presenting at this conference? What's the need for you to present? Why are you even having such a discussion? Which is a really good question, right? It's a really good question.
Great. Some people are paralysed by diversity and inclusion and don't do anything. How can we help these people to get on board and move them forwards in a kind way? Anahira. Hayley, do you want to answer that one?
Look, if they can, highly likely to drive to work in a very flash car, then I think they're being pretty kind to themselves, right? So they can have some toughness. I think, I mean, you can, the individuals need to lean in with compassion, some empathy, reflection, accountability and authenticity. So I think first of all, acknowledging kind of where my blind spots are, you know, where's my areas of improvement, how am I going to keep myself accountable? So if my same patterns, i.e., you know, my feed looks the same, the books, my groups, go looking for your boss. Go looking for people who are going to put you outside of your comfort zone. Be very clear on your lane. So it is not your role to save others, and no one needs to be saved. Save yourself first. But how can you give other people a step up or a platform up or the space or the ear or a seat at the table, all of those sort of things. I think one of the things I often encourage our leaders at least is when somebody shares with you the impact of your leadership, and perhaps you know, you haven't set things up as they would have liked, or actually the impact hasn't been that great. I know the tendency is to sort of be defensive and sort of react, but I would encourage you in that instance, one, to acknowledge that you've heard. Okay, so see the sharing as a bit of a koha, as a gift, as an opportunity for you as a leader to increase the tools in your kete or your leadership toolkit. So acknowledge that you've heard. Tell them that you are reflecting, and I don't have all of the answers. But once I've reflected and acknowledged that I've heard you, let's sit down and make a plan. But take your time with those steps as well, so that you can make sure that the ways in which you do react are not built on some traits, particularly of the past. You know, I think leadership has been seen through one lens, again, to acknowledge our Prime Minister, who leads us with empathy through the global pandemic, and she rose to that occasion because she wasn't a scientist. She surrounded herself with people with expert knowledge and then communicated to the masses. So for our people leaders, start to think about people who surround themselves with people who they can invest, whether or not they're the technicians. You don't need to be the expert yourself. What you need to be is a person who leads others and invests and sets up the conditions for them to perform and deliver and thrive.
Great. Sean, the role of men in creating a gender equal workplace, give us some tips.
Yeah, so men are in the decision-making powers right now in corporate, right? So we lack diversity in senior leadership roles in NZX-listed organisations, full stop. We are behind the rest of the world. So you do need to ensure that you've got male allies and sponsors kind of progressing the agenda, because that's where the decision-making currently sits. One of the things that I've learnt through the journey that we've been on at Chorus is why is it that men choose not to progress the agenda? So let's put ourselves in the shoes of the pale male, but I'm not stale. My team would attest to that. One, I think there is a lack of empathy. So I think through the lens of the male and decision-making power, it is, well, everyone's treated the same, aren't they? Two, I think there's a lack of apathy. And what I mean by that is there is no reason for me to care. Which links three to they're not held to account. So how am I incentivized? What is my boss requiring of me? The idea of targets does polarize people. We have targets for a reason. It tracks progress, and we're held to account on that. And then four, I think it is they feel that they will be judged. So I'm not even going to give it a go. So for us at Chorus, we don't apologise that we've got a focus on building a female leadership and have balance. We don't apologise that we have specific investment strategies in our females. We have created equity for all parents at Chorus. So dads get the same amount of time off as mums. And one of the other things we've identified is that there's an inequity happening in superannuation right now. So when you return back to work at Chorus, we will retrospectively pay your super into your account, because there's quite a big piece of research around inequity that we're seeing at retirement. So be prepared, there'll be a backlash. We have an engagement survey open right now. We do that every 3 months. I read every day around 300 comments, and some of them make my skin crawl.
Good, good. Zoe, what would you say to someone who doesn't feel supported in the workplace, who doesn't feel like they belong?
I would say talk to someone, and I know this can be a really hard thing to do, because often that person that people don't feel supported by is the person leading them, who they are supposed to be able to talk to. So I guess I would seek out someone else to speak to in the organisation and find someone who you can talk to, whether that is someone who is a leader or whether it's one of your colleagues. I know a lot of organisations offer EAP or other support, so absolutely seek that out and use it. I always say to people, use your maximum every single year, no matter even if you're not feeling like you're going through a crisis, because it is absolutely beneficial. Just use what you can. But I think it's really important, and this is going back to not putting the onus on individuals, but the onus on organisations. They have to provide a support system within the organisation where if someone isn't happy, if they don't feel like they belong, there's a really clear path in terms of who they speak to around this, and it can't just be the person who's leading them. It can't be just be their manager. There's got to be someone else who is responsible for taking feedback, possibly confidentially, taking that feedback and actually acting on it. So it's really, really important for an organisation to have different paths and to be seen as acting on whatever is said.
I love the sharing of seeking out counselling. That's the EAP, right? I'll just share some research around that. Like, a lot of people used to be really scared about seeing a psychologist or a counsellor because they felt that they'll be stuck on the counsellor's couch for forever or be spiralled into some terrible history or that it would cost a huge fortune. Well, actually, it's only about 3 sessions and you can have a complete change and a complete transformation. Often people only need 3 sessions with a psychologist or a counsellor and then they're in a much, much better space. Actually, Teresa Gadding shared some stuff in my book around resilience. And even if you're at the top of your game or seen as someone who's very, very tough, you will go through some period in your life where you feel like you need help or you need support, and this is quite normal. And Teresa Gadding shared in my book, actually, about her raw emotions, how she fell down. She lost a very, very good friend of hers, and she was starting to lose herself. And it was a very, very good friend of hers who said, "Hey, I think you need to see someone." She was courageous enough to actually agree, and she went along, and she says it was the best thing that she ever did because she not only got into a better place, but, yeah, she was just herself again. And, yeah, I love that she shared that vulnerability. She's seen as someone very high up, very well known, very, very successful. So I just want you to know that it's quite normal for us all to fall down on our knees sometimes, but that it's okay to seek help and it can be super helpful. So thank you so much for sharing that, Zoe.
Can I just add one thing to that? Sorry if you were just about to speak. I just wanted to say, I know it's a terrible time to be looking for a new job in this space, but organisations who aren't putting in place support for people to support like EAP or support where you can go and say, I don't feel like I belong, I feel like I'm being bullied, I feel like I'm being discriminated against somewhere, are going to be left behind because this is a journey which a lot of organisations are going on. So if you aren't feeling listened to, if you don't feel like you belong in your organisation, maybe it's the wrong organisation for you. So don't quit now because it's a terrible time to look for a job. But you know, start that little thought in your head and maybe look into other opportunities, because it sounds cliche, but you know, everyone deserves to be in an organisation, in a place where they spend a hell of a lot of their time, somewhere where they feel like they really authentically belong.
Rachel, I was just going to say, coming back to your question around the place that Fonterra has around this diversity and inclusion space, I think in addition to obviously our place in the economy, and our financial results, I think as New Zealand's biggest corporate export organisation, we have every reason to role model and normalise things like mental health. The agriculture industry, particularly our farmers, continue to commit suicide at a very alarming rate. that is not spoken about, and that is not spoken about because one of the pieces is that there continues to be a stigma associated, and so it's only, I know it's only one of the parts, and that alone is a compelling reason for us to lead and role model and normalise not only conversations, not only vulnerability, but also how do you bounce back from that as well. And if you think about the fruitness and the absolute freedom of being able to bust gender stereotypes that not only wed people to particular roles, i.e. career roles, you know, men have typically been seen as more suited to commercial roles. I don't know where that comes from. Anyone that knows Anne from Tuputua, you will know that she is the best salesperson in Auckland. She will sell you to Butoa in turns like you have never experienced before. But my point, again, is around the absolute freedom that will come from busting historical gender stereotypes for all of us. And so that is another compelling reason why we have every reason to lead out and role model normalising conversations. It's probably might come as a surprise to lots of you, but our farmers are absolutely at the heart of that.
How are you helping our male farmers?
Yeah, we lead, so our culture, our local office, and I just want to acknowledge my colleague Michelle, who I see is here today, but Michelle is one of those people who you absolutely want on your side because she continues to lead out, again, just conversations, just get people talking, because it is infectious, right? So if somebody, and it's that comfort by numbers, sometimes, you know, we're reluctant if there's one or two of us, but if you see three, four, and what a beautiful thing it is when you have 100 people in a room sharing what they're feeling. And even if sometimes you're not expressing it outwardly, the fact that you're present and around that is a beautiful thing. Sorry, I forgot your question.
Just what you...
I need a wine. I'm on.
The stance around mental health and suicide rates, they're just, yeah. Please keep doing the work there.
Yeah, so I think... So what we are doing is the large majority of our workforce in New Zealand, at least in the regions. And funny enough, when you go out on site, it's one of my favourite times because it's just so real and raw. I mean, I love Auckland too, but you know, don't get me wrong on that. But I do love going out into the regions, down to our sites. And the reason why is because they have such a sense of community. And again, I think that's the role that we've got to play in there. So just being really clear on your lane. It's not about you saving other people, but it's you creating opportunities for people to, dare I say it, lean in, lean out, lean sideways, lean backwards if you need to. Just do something, particularly if you need some help. And so I think our sites, and I've got to acknowledge our manufacturing workforce for all of the work that they do out in, you know, across the regions, because those are the, once our milk leaves our farms, it's all of our amazing people in our sites who are out in regional New Zealand. And I think that's the part. I know for Māori, I think we are pretty confident we're the biggest employer of Māori out in the region. And so again, you know, our Māori men, we don't... for those of you lucky enough or unlucky to fall in love with a Māori man, you know, our men still struggle with this. And again, I think starting with individuals and starting with groups, but collectively, if we can start to role model and encourage, you know, one person is too many that loses their life to this mental illness. And so if we can role model that, then besides the economics, beside the financial returns, that alone is a very compelling reason.
Yeah, so inclusion comes in so many different shapes and forms and really important in some companies so much more than others, and with New Zealand's high suicide stats, deeply important. I'm going to throw this question out to whoever wants to answer it, actually. But how can we work on unconscious bias? What tools can we use? I used one the other day, actually. You can go online.
Can I just start on this? I don't like the term unconscious bias at all. I think it, yes, good. I think it gives people an excuse to go, well, I wasn't conscious of it, so I don't, you know, I can keep doing it.
So I think we need to call it what it is. It's racism, it's sexism, it's homophobia, it's all those ism words. If unconscious bias training is done well, which it sometimes is, then it can have benefits. But I think we need to get rid of that word and focus on the real reason why people are being treated badly.
So maybe it's about raising awareness, because some people aren't aware, I guess. Yeah, and how to shift them forwards. What about tokenism? What do we do about that? Who wants to answer that one? You're ducking.
Is this tokenism? So as a Māori woman,
yeah,
I'm
say like
get a
Māori tokenism. Is it? Yeah.
Well, I think it comes back to again, you can't be a little bit racist, a little bit prejudiced, a little bit inappropriate. If you are those things, you are those things, and that label's got to stick. Again, might come as a surprise, but I want to be the best person in the room as well. I am not wed to your gender stereotypes or your cultural stereotypes. So what I get often is, oh gosh, Hayley, you're very articulate. And I'll say, when I was a lawyer, and I used to get, when's John getting here, the partner? And I'm like, here's John, a hot John, but I'm the John, I'm the lawyer. And so again, the stuff that needs to be fixed is not in my head or all of our heads or women's heads or anyone that at this point in time are, you know, not in power or not in the majority. And I think, again, tokenism is what it is. I don't think tokenism is a question. I think tokenism is a label, and if it sticks on you, again, you can't be a little bit of those things. You are those things, and it's your opportunity to get better, not mine. I can't fix you.
Actually, speaking on sharing some anecdotes, I find sexism actually comes from women more than men for myself. So I travel a lot for my work. I've always been very, active in the workspace since my kids were little. And even just last week, a woman said to me, wow, you must have a really understanding husband. You're away a lot. And my jaw drops. I think, gosh, you know, if I was a man, that would never happen in reverse. And it still makes my skin crawl when I hear that. It makes me wild inside. And I'm a yogi, so...
I just want to pick up on that tokenism point, because we sort of get that quite a lot. I'll just use an example. My daughter, she's just got an internship. She speaks Māori, of course. And she's always the one, she's only 20, but they'll say, oh, can you translate that? Or, oh, can you come and do a karakia for that? Or can you come into this meeting and welcome this Māori person that's coming into the office? And she's, you know, she's an intern, but the expectation is that if you have a skill that you should do it without any question. And I think the thing is too, maybe that we're not helping that, because we're conditioned to do it, because if we don't do it, who else is going to step into those roles to allow our tikanga to be performed in a meaningful way in business? And so I think we need to, for those of us that are in roles of influence, to really check ourselves on that. Because, you know, I'm trying to think of another way of how tokenism's used, but that's not something, you know, that is years and years of mātauranga that you have to learn to be able to conduct yourselves in those ways. And so how do we then acknowledge the mātauranga that is being shared amongst us in those forums? And I think that's something to think about. When we do have to ask those questions, is that how do you acknowledge that? How does your organisation acknowledge that? Because we should all be trying to move towards that space if we are true about creating diverse environments.
Oh, well, and I think the other point around meritocracy, because appointment on merit is inherently biased as well. And I think that's often not talked. So I get this all the time around, Hayley, I get the D&I thingy, but I just want to appoint the best person for the role. And I'm like, and that doesn't change. In fact, this gives you a whole lot more talent for you to consider and appoint and bring on. for some time, the reality is that, yep, there'll be some what I like to call affirmative action, so bringing people into the room, but it's compelling again. And so I think merit can often be a sort of, it's the same as unconscious bias. I think it's used to sort of bat away. But don't get stuck on this kind of hole that people go down in terms of appointment on merit and meritocracy. People, that should change, and the best people should still be appointed.
How can we find mentors to lead us through better change? Sean, kick it off.
Find mentors. Yeah, well, I think the key thing there is trying to find someone who's not like you, right? Because that's part of the problem in terms of the biases that get reinforced. We get attracted to people that are like ourselves, so it's really easy to listen to feedback from someone who's like you. So I'd encourage you to be bold and look for someone who's not like you, because they will offer you a massively different perspective, and that's where you can change and evolve.
Fantastic. And also, sorry, just to add to that, look at it as a reciprocal mentoring situation. So it's not this senior older person that has all this knowledge and wealth and power who's teaching the younger, more inexperienced person. There's so much benefit to having we're on an equal level here, and I can learn just as much from you as you can learn from me, and organisations really benefit from that. And also, just to switch it around a little bit, I want to put the onus on organisations to set up, with flexibility, mentoring schemes, so it's not just like, I'm an individual, I know I want to find a mentor, it's up to me, but actually there's somewhere I can go, I'm interested in this, and the organisation takes some responsibility to help that relationship grow.
I think this is why representation matters, because more people that look like me, speak like me, act like me, that I see, that are different to what might be on the, dare I say it, menu at the moment. Again, I think my piece of advice often to young women is just trust life and trust process and trust experience. And I know social media is massive, and in fact I sort of I have a huge degree of sort of sympathy, because, you know, when we were used to write our names in those books and we used to do those pram things on the paper, man, these kids have got the internet and social media to contend with these days. And so I think that's why representation matters. And I just want to acknowledge, actually, I know Jenny May's in the room somewhere, and Indira Stewart recently was appointed as on the breakfast panel. You know, when I was growing up, my role models, I never thought about it until now. I just want to be Anna Green Gables and Judy Bailey and Alison Hulse and all of these amazing women. But it wasn't until I sort of got to my 40s, I was like, actually, I'm kind of happy being in my brown skin.
Wow, that's amazing. See, I grew up in Rotorua, and I had Auntie B speaking Maori to me for many, many years. So I feel quite deeply connected to this culture. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, and well, again, I don't think it's for what you do or don't stand for, or you individually. I think, to your point around sponsorship and mentorship, just first of all, get really comfortable with yourself. And that is a journey, a beautiful journey that evolves through time. And I would encourage all of you who are mentors or sponsors to encourage young women to be themselves. Don't turn them into clones and this ideal around, if you want to be successful, you need to do this, that and the other thing. Because imposter syndrome is real, right? So real in all of us. So just, I would really encourage you to just accelerate the conversations around being comfortable in our own skin. And all of us have done 50 million diets. I probably will start another one on Monday. But the point is, you don't have to do that stuff. I wish a number of things that I could tell my 17-year-old self. One of them would be just get comfortable in your own skin, because that will save you not only a lot of money and a lot of those discarded powdered drink thingies that no one ever eats because they're yuck. But it will save you all of this in your head. And I think that's a beautiful thing if we can accelerate our young women. And I think Aotearoa, particularly our opportunity with COVID and the way that we're leading, and everyone wants to be us, what a cool thing as well for our women to be the forefront of actually we want to all be ourselves, and that's amazing.
I love it. Your authenticity, be raw, real, vulnerable, be you.
Welcome to the M2 Women podcast. This episode is from our M2 Women Journey to Excellence live forum, held on the 20th of November 2020. It's brought to you by Adashiko, Piper Heidsieck, and Polynesian Spa.